Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Trucks. In this episode, I'm joined by Fair Fuel UK founder, Howard Cox. In addition to his quest to save motorists and hauliers money at the pumps, Howard also has some strong opinions on some other subjects, like cyclists, ULEZs, and the UK's demonisation of combustion engine vehicles. Howard, welcome. Thanks for joining me. First of all, tell us exactly what Fair Fuel UK is. How did you come up with the concept? When did you come up with the concept? Let's have a bit of history.
Okay, well, it is Fair Fuel UK, and it has been set up, or was set up, back in January 2011, so we're talking something like 12 to 13 years ago, to essentially counter the incredible high taxation on UK drivers. And that's everyone from a motorbike all the way up to a 40-ton truck are paying ridiculous amounts of tax. At that time, it was about 70 to 75% of everything that went into the tank and when we filled up at the forecourts went to the government in fuel duty and VAT. And one of the big things that really upsets people at the moment is the fact there's VAT on fuel duty as well, double taxation. So that's what Fair Fuel UK was all about. We managed to bring together the big road haulage associations and the RAC.
Because you were specifically about haulage at the start, weren't you?
Yes, I was actually doing some consultancy work for a haulage company. And I looked at some of their records and saw just how much they were paying in fuel. And it was something like in one particular case, I saw something like 45% of their costs was fuel. And this was a small, medium-sized trucking company, which had rigids and articulated trucks and also some big vans. They had something like 45% of their costs was going in fuel. And of that, those costs, something like 70 to 75% was going to the exchequer. And it just doesn't make any sense. And I did some research at the time and found out we were the highest tax motorists in the world out of 230 countries.
Blimey, yeah, I can believe that. Okay, so why do you do what you do? Are you doing this purely for the sake of the motorists? I mean, you must be getting something out of you yourself. Do you draw a salary from this?
No, I don't. I don't draw a salary to it whatsoever. We were sponsored by, or backed away, or funded by the Road Haulage Association and the Freight Transport Association. Right from the start. But also the RAC and some other small organisations also joined in. So we had about £10,000-£12,000 a month coming in to actually start a campaign to tell the government we're not going to stand for this. You've got to appreciate at the time, Gordon Brown had left a plan, what's called the fuel price escalator.
I remember.
And every single autumn statement and budget, there was potentially an increase in inflation plus 2 to 3 pence, yeah. Something like that. It could be 1 to 2 pence in some cases, but anyway, what would happen? If we hadn't have started this campaign, what's happened in the last 13 years, pump prices would be something like approaching £2.80 per litre. I'll repeat that.
About really?
If you did the extrapolation of exactly inflation, bear in mind inflation is now 10%, and if they did the escalator, imagine fuel going up 10% plus plus 2p. And I repeat my point about it, the government are wallowing in a shed load of not only fuel duty, but the VAT. And we'll probably come on to talking about the diesel pricing differences at the moment. But that's what we were about, and we managed to build a massive amount of support. And at that same time, David Cameron introduced a thing called an e-petition, and it's the first time ever, which allowed that if you've got 100,000 supporters actually signed up to your e-petition, whatever you were campaigning for, you'd get a debate at the House of Commons. In the House of Commons, provided you've got 100,000 supporters. Well, Fairfield UK managed to get 100,000. We were the first ever to get that e-petition.
Brilliant.
And I did a lot of work with my colleagues in both at the RHA and the FTA. We managed to get a lot of MP backbench support from the Tories coming in there, particularly from people like Robert Halfen, MP, and I must give him some credit for this because he became Mr. Fairfield UK in Parliament. And we got some great support, and we built up a load of supporters. Got 100,000 for the e-petition, but then we've now got 1.7 million who've signed
that's
up.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. They're not all active. They've, bear in mind, that's a sign up since 2011. So we're talking in 12, 13 years. But we've got about 500,000 that are active and 250,000 very active. So MPs are a bit nervous of Fairfield UK because I only have to ask supporters to email their MP. And invariably, you know, on some issue like keeping fuel duty down or stopping smart motorways or all those sorts of things that are actually big issues at the moment, invariably the MP will get something like 3,000 to 4,000 emails in the space of 48 hours. And so they realise it's important. And we mustn't forget the fifth largest income to the Treasury still comes from drivers.
Yeah. So why aren't the RHA and the FTA involved anymore?
Yeah, yes, I feel very sad about it.
Logistics UK, I should
say.
Yes,
of course, yes. I'm very saddened by the we've lost that, considering how much money we've saved for their members in terms of the making sure fuel duty's been frozen. We must repeat that. Fuel duty's been frozen since 2011. In fact, in March 2011, we got a penny reduction. It was expected to go up by 4 to 5p in that budget. And we managed to convince David Cameron and George Osborne to actually make sure that we did get some sort of reduction. We didn't expect that reduction, we expected it to be frozen, but we got a penny off. May not sound a lot, but we got a penny off. In the scheme of things, for businesses, especially with trucks doing 8 miles to the gallon, that's a huge saving in their monthly costs. And last year, 2022, we got, of course, Rishi Sunak, when he was Chancellor, he actually, because of the lockdown, all sorts of things going on at the moment, and because of the high we hit oil, petrol and diesel was going up to close to £2, he reduced fuel duty by 5p. And so in that time, since 2011, I must repeat, it's frozen with a 6p cut we've had in that time. And if we hadn't have done that, a lot of the RHA and the Logistics UK members would not be trading now. They'd be bankrupt. I've had many a letter from their members, mainly the small, medium-sized ones, not the big boys, most of the smaller ones, saying, thank you so much for what you've done. I wouldn't be trading now if it wasn't for the fact for your campaign.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, what I want to do is chat to you about your five campaign objectives for 2023. So that's cutting fuel duty, implementing Pump Watch, scrapping the 2030 combustion engine ban, stopping new LEZs, and reversing anti-driver policy. So let's kick off. First one, cutting fuel duty. Now, obviously, that's what Fairfuel UK is best known for. And in the recent budget, the Chancellor decided to freeze duty. Yes. Is that classed as a win?
It was a win, considering just after, if you remember the autumn statement, Jeremy Hunt stood up. For the first time in my been campaigning since 2011, there was no mention of fuel duty in the autumn statement. And we thought that was a bit funny, didn't mention it at all. But within 2 or 3 hours after, the OBR, the Office of Budget Responsibility, came out with a press release to say there would be, in the March budget, which we just gone past, there will be a 23% rise in fuel duty, which is equivalent to about 12p. With VAT on top, it would have been about 15 pence increase. That was hidden. That was hidden from everyone. That was in the small print. So the win of getting a freeze was fantastic. And considering we're in a situation where the government owes so much money because of the lockdown and all the things going on, it was a big, big win. And bear in mind, corporation tax has gone up and the fuel duty stayed frozen. It shows the power of our campaigning and how important keeping fuel prices down, etc. But we're hearing that Jeremy Hunt is also saying that in 2024, the next time, that he cannot afford to keep fuel duty frozen anymore. So our core objective, our core campaigning objective continues. We're going to be fighting to keep fuel duty frozen and preferably cut. And if we could only get through to them to realise that if they took something like 20 to 30p off fuel duty, what it would do to the economy, what it would do to inflation, all those sorts of things, why he doesn't recognise it. Common sense says reduce taxes, reduce business costs, reduce inflation, reduce what we're paying in the shops. It's a no-brainer to understand, but for some reason they still have a short-term thinking, let's get as much cash off the driver as possible, because that's an easy win.
Well, they haven't worked out how to get the money out of the electric car drivers yet, have they? So I guess...
Well, there's £35 billion a year is actually comes from fuel duty and VAT combined. We're told that something like one in five cars by 2030 will be electric vehicles, in fact, probably more. So when you think of one in five cars, so let's take, they're going to lose £7 to £8 billion of taxation. And the interesting thing about this also is, what's the incentive for garages to continue to sell petrol and diesel? You know, why would you want to go, oh, I'm going to go buy a garage and sell petrol and diesel when they're told that it's in 5-10 years it's going to disappear? And so yes, they haven't worked out electric vehicles, but again, in the spring, in the November statement by Jeremy Hunt, he did mention there would be some taxation of electric vehicles, but he didn't mention it again, he didn't follow up with that in the March budget. All road users should be paying tax, in my opinion. They should be, but it should be a fair tax, and that includes cyclists.
Oh, very controversial.
Oh, yes.
So how would that work?
I don't know how that would work. We'd need to sit around the table and talk about it. But I think all bicycles should be registered. I think all riders should actually have some sort of test. We had a cycling proficiency test. I'm 69 years of age, and I took a cycling proficiency test at school. I think it should be. I think their bicycles should have a form of MOT to make sure that they are fit roadworthy. They should be insured too, and they should contribute something to the potholes that repairs. And they, at the moment, most cyclists, I think, would agree with that to some extent. I'm not suggesting they have a great big number plate on them, but maybe they should have a tabard with some sort of number or something that they wear which has a number of a plate. Because let's face it, with the latest highway code changes, we've got this hierarchy of blame.
Yeah,
and pedestrians are quite rightly should be looked after, but cyclists, they can drive into a car, can do anything they want, they can turn right in front of a truck at a crossroads, etc. And if anything happens, they will not get the blame.
Yeah.
Also, and they're famous for going through red lights, and you know, and we'll probably talk about it in a minute. But you know, London is a classic example of where cyclists rule.
Okay, so did you say how much are we currently paying in duties? Is it 53?
Yeah, it's 52.95p per litre is what we're paying. And as I repeat, keep saying, the VAT is on top of that.
Yes, of course.
And the whole amount you put in your tank. So it's, you know, you're looking at £1.45, something like that, £1.49 for petrol and £1.62 for diesel. You know, you're looking at, per litre that is, 52.95 of that is fuel duty, and then there's 20% on the whole amount you put in your tank plus the fuel duty.
So are there any European countries that pay more than that?
Well, in terms of taxation,
yeah,
there are some Scandinavians, I call them. I think there's a few of those which are a bit more expensive. Hong Kong pays more in taxation, etc. But Hong Kong, you can't move. It only does about 3 miles.
Yeah, that's right.
That sort of thing. But we're still in the top, always in the top five of the most highly taxed countries in the world. And it's interesting to think, if Fairfield UK hadn't existed and we didn't won them, we'd be right at the top all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So how optimistic are you that you're going to be able to keep this fight going?
Well, we've got a general election next year, don't forget. And one thing is, we've got 1.7 million supporters, which means we've got about 2,500 supporters of Fairfield UK in each MP's constituency.
Yeah.
And where there's marginal seats, I can assure you that we have a bit of influence. And because we're getting close to the general election, I'm getting a lot of phone calls from MPs. Oh, we support the motorists, we support the driver, how we're right behind you and all this sort of thing. So they don't want to say anything bad. And I have to say that most of the backbench Tory MPs and a lot of Labour backbench MPs really do support the motorists and the driver, and they think they're getting a bad deal for years and years and years. They're demonised, they're highly taxed, they're being restricted on roads and all sorts of things like this. And what we need to see is to have some sort of long-term road user road strategy, because we've never ever had a long-term road user strategy. Never had one at all. With our cycle of, you know, umpteen different prime ministers in the last year, and umpteen, you know, short-term in terms of the political cycle, we should be planning. Look at HS2, what a disaster that's become now. All those sorts of things. And, you know, we did a study about 2017 with the Centre for Economic and Business Research, who did a fantastic bit of work for Fairfield UK. We actually asked the question, if we'd spent the same amount of money at that point that they were spending on HS2 on new roads or rebuilding roads, believe it or not, we could have actually put a new lane on every single motorway in this country. And that would,
wow.
And And what with the smart motorways, you know, controversies going on around the time, and as we know, the smart motorways is just road building on the cheap. It's all it was.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that sort of thing. And to some extent, you know, one reason why the FTA or the Logistics UK dropped me is because of my stance on smart motorways. I'm totally against them. But the FTA, Logistics UK, are pro them.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that anyone could be pro smart motorways.
They see
it
because they've done some research to show that when they've got four lanes instead of three lanes, all fully being used, it becomes much more efficient for deliveries and things like that. And I share that, but why are we not campaigning for safer roads first?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the fact you're encouraged to break down in the lane that you're going to be hit by a 44-ton truck is just
well, we've had 70 deaths because of them.
Madness, absolutely madness. Right, moving on. Pump Watch. Tell us what it is.
Well, this is something I'm very passionate about. We've talked about the taxation, but the other half, at the moment, in terms of taxation at the moment, the diesel petrol tax is about 50% of it goes to the government, all in all. The other 50%, obviously, is the commercial side. And quite rightly, people running it to make money. Good luck to them. But what we have seen for too long is that when oil prices change or the exchange rate changes, no one understands how pump prices are arrived at. No one has a clue. All your readers and all your listeners will recognise the fact is they go past one garage, they see petrol 5p more than this, 5p less than that. And believe it or not, usually from the same brand of petrol, oil. You know, you get a BP station 5 miles apart, they're selling it for differently. You don't get that sort of difference with milk or bread in Sainsbury's or those sorts of things. And so I looked at the detail of this and I did some analysis and I was seeing some very inconsistent, dare I say it, racketeering, profiteering going on in the fuel supply chain. And it's not necessarily the small garages doing it. They're being forced into pricing, which they have to do because they're actually tied to very tight contracts with their wholesalers.
I see.
And the wholesalers themselves, they're the ones that dictate what we pay at the pumps. We're seeing now, right now, and I can give examples for years gone by, but one now, which is a big one, the current price of wholesale price, so that's the price that retailers buy their fuel to sell to us, for petrol is 5 to 7p more than diesel.
Really?
Yep. But diesel, when you put in the tank, is something like 14 to 20 pence more.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at that sort of thing. Now, I've worked out that every single day the government is enjoying something like £7 million per day in extra fuel duty and VAT because of this price manipulation. So hence the reason you asked the question about what is Pump Watch. We came up, we've got Ofcom, we've got Ofwat, we've got Ofgem, we've got all these things which are consumer price regulatory bodies. Why haven't we got something for 37 million drivers for an essential resource for us to get around, i.e. petrol and diesel?
Yeah.
We should have that. I don't want a full-blooded control system because I do believe in competition. But the thing what we should do is, what I'm looking for is a system that gives us transparency, fairness and honesty and people understanding how pump prices arrived at. And the way it would work is very simple. And Jeremy Hunt has got a paper. He asked for me to write this. A paper, how this would work, and I've got some massive backing. We've people like Craig McKinley, who's now chair of the Fair Fuel APPG in Parliament, and people like Jonathan Gullis, MP for a Red Wall seat, Stoke-on-Trent North, put together a lovely letter to Jeremy Hunt, signed by 50, 60 MPs, saying we need Pump Watch, we need some sort of control. And the way it would work is very simple. It wouldn't cost much. It's really simple to do. Every morning, the garage would actually, when they come into work, it's just send an email or some sort of digital response to a central independent group who, with the prices, what you're selling petrol for today, what you're selling diesel, what you're selling LPG for today, plus also what are you buying it in for when you bought it? Because there's this problem about, you know, when you bought it, what's in the tanks was bought at the old price and new price. But everyone knows the adage now, and I was one of the people that pushed this out, is that when, you know, when oil goes up, pump prices go up like a rocket, but they come down like a feather. And you've heard it all before. So Pump Watch is something, at the moment I want it to be an independent, voluntary participation group with maybe a kite mark, you've probably seen my Pump Watch logo, which we would have on every garage. It means they'd adhere to fair, transparent and honest pricing. If they didn't do it, the consumer driving could just say, oh, they haven't got that logo, we can go somewhere else. See, and that was the way to... That's stage one. Stage two would be full-blown legislative, Ofgem, Ofcom, Ofwat powers. And a lot, there's a lot of MPs want that. And if you look on my website, your Fairfield UK's website, you'll see just how much MPs back it buy into this.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense to me. Right, next one. Stopping the ban of combustion engine vehicles. So cars, that's 2030, and with trucks, that's 2035 for anything 26 tonnes or below,
yeah.
And then 2040 for above that. So not a fan of electric vehicles then?
I'm a total fan. I think electric vehicles are fantastic. I've got no problem. And please get that across. I've actually driven one. I've been on the Top Gear circuit, driving one of the top Teslas. And when you press the throttle down on the electric vehicle and you get to 60 in 2 seconds, it's fun.
Yeah, phenomenal, but, quick, isn't it?
But they're expensive, they're practical, and quite honestly, we're being sold, we've almost been brainwashed by people to say that they are actually clean. From cradle to grave, compared to an internal combustion engine, diesel and petrol vehicle, compared to an electric vehicle, from cradle to grave, that's when you first start building or collecting the lithium, the cobalt, all the things for the battery, all the way through to disposal after you've used it, there's hardly any difference in emissions for this, you know, saving all of that. Yes, when you're driving an electric vehicle, nothing comes out of the exhaust because there isn't one, and etc. It is totally clean. But to get to the stage and actually where they actually beat the internal combustion engine, you've got to drive about 80,000 miles.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so those are the sorts of things. So I'm pro-electric vehicle, but as I said in a report, which I passed on to you, you'll see our first recommendation. What we should be allowing is not to have an edict to tell us what particular, because it's a virtual signalling edict, you know, it's green, it looks fantastic. But we're being conned. But what we should be doing is investing in clean fuel technology. Euro 6 diesels are cleaner than petrol. And then there's fuel catalysts, there's synthetic fuels, e-fuels, there's the hydrogen engine. There's also much better ways of actually using hybrids. All these sorts of things. And believe it or not, I did some research the other day and I looked at a report from the WHO and they listed the most dirtiest particulates. And particulates, we talk about NOx, nitrogen dioxide, but particulates seems to be, you know, get a bit hidden. They're little bits of soot. There's two sizes, the 10 microns and the 2.5 microns. And the 2.5 microns are seen as very bad in terms of lungs. They get buried in things like that. And they could become carcinogenic. That's cancer-forming type situation. This particular report from the WHO looked, I think, at around about 150 countries, which had the most particulates, the most sooty. And it, as you'd expect, Delhi, in the Chad, Middle East, some of those things. London, for example, was 90th.
Was it really?
And it's almost as lower than background acceptability, which is accepted by the EU, even the IPCC and the WHO. We are being sold a story as though, and every driver's been made to feel guilty. Oh God, I'm driving a horrible, dirty vehicle car. I'm killing people. You're not. And there's none bigger attacker of drivers than the current London mayor.
Yes, well, we're going to come on to ULEZs in a second. What really grates on me is the term zero emission when we're talking zero tailpipe emission. In commercial motor, we make a point of putting that word in. Just today, I saw a press release from the SMMT, and it's all about zero emission trucks. But no, it's not, is it?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. All these phrases coming out, you know, it's totally and utterly unfair. We're not being told the truth. One of the things we did do, I work very closely with the Motorcycle Action Group and the Alliance of British Drivers. And we put funds into the Centre for Economic Business Research to work out what would the 2030 ban of new diesel and new petrol cars mean to the economy. And I will send you the report, but I've summarised it in the newspaper that I've given to you in front of you, your eyes there. The benefits would be this. let me turn it around a bit better. Imagine you're my boss, you're a minister, and I'm a special advisor. I've come to see, I've got this great idea, Will. I can actually give you £80 billion per year of environmental benefits. And you'd say, wow, Great, how would you do that? Well, we'd ban diesel and petrol cars in 2030. Okay, well, so how much would it cost? $450 billion.
Yeah.
It would cost five times the alleged environmental benefits. And that's the point. These are independent report. We commissioned it, but we asked them to do this. We would have accepted whatever it came back, but what's happening in 2030 is going to cost every household £1,000 per year till 2050. That £1,000 a year they're going to pay for, even if they haven't got an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
That's what the cost to the economy is going to be. And there's so much more. And I will send you details of that report. You can see it there. It's on our website anyway. But that's what the pup we've been sold by this government, who are hell-bent on actually trying to lead the world, when really we should be actually standing up to this and saying, yes, we want a clean environment. We want to breathe clean air. We want a green planet, all the sorts of things that we're all talking, all the buzzwords. But the best way to do that is not harming the economy or harming individuals or businesses, because we will go bankrupt if we go on this process now.
Yeah.
So that's why I want the 2030 ban to be scrapped, or at least on a moratorium till 2040.
2040, okay. And then presumably push the truck one back 5 years as well.
Yeah, everything, every internal combustion engine to stay till 2040, which allow clean fuel technology to evolve alongside. And I bet you we'll see cleaner petrol, cleaner diesel vehicles, and even after 2040. And that, you know, they might wake up and realise, hey, and bear in mind, we've got 100 years of oil. You see, I'm a great believer in fracking and things like that. And this not in my backyard. I'm telling the government now, if you want to come and put get some fracking on my house now, you can come and do it. I'm happy for you to do it.
All right then, now, ULEZs.
Yeah.
So we're here in Sutton, in Commercial Motors office. This is going to be in the new extended ULEZ come August time,
which
means my relatively modern diesel car is no good for the commute, and I'll have to use my 22-year-old 4-litre V8 Jag instead. Which seems absolutely crazy.
Well, the most powerful politician in the country, called Sadiq Khan, is responsible for this. And he's autocratic, he's unilateral, and he's got the ego the size of the planet. There's no love lost between us. He knows me very well. And what he's doing is, we've had ULEZ, already in the centre of London. Then it was extended in 2019 to the North and South Circular, and now it's going to be extended on August the 29th to essentially the M25 all the way around London. And even his own research, his own Transport for London team, have said it will make no difference to the air quality we breathe if we expand it. He's doing it purely because it's a cash grab. Bear in mind, you've got to realise he's run this administration, the London administration, into such debt, he has to kind of get some cash from somewhere. The interesting thing also, he's a liar. And you can actually quote me, he's a pathological liar. And you put it in quotes, it's all said to me, I'm quite happy to say that, and he can get his lawyers on to me, I don't care. He has done several things wrong. He's lied to the London Assembly members about what he knew about the public consultation process, which went last year, that he asked all of us to, in London or anywhere you want to be, to take part in the public consultation process. Do you want the ULEZ expansion going ahead? 5,000 Fairfield UK members, supporters, actually responded to that, all objecting to it. Mm-hmm. He's thrown those out of the public consultation agreement. And he also, 6 months before the public consultation even took place, he ordered the cameras that were going to go into place.
Yeah, I see quite a few of those are getting destroyed at the moment, aren't they?
Yes, they are indeed. And that's wrong. We mustn't do that. We do not smash up things. I'm totally against that. But you can understand the anger from people. Many years ago, there was a thing, you remember the Captain Gatso people all those years ago, with the speed cameras, which all that sort of thing. But the other thing also, he's using fatality data as a lever and an emotive way to try and get his thing through. He's saying that every year 4,000 people die of poor air quality. Well, I've written to him three times asking, could you send me all the medical certificates? It's not true. One person, which is unfortunate, anyone dying is unfortunate, who unfortunately that person had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and severe asthma, died of poor air quality according to the coroner. That's the only thing registered. The 4,000 thing is a complete lie. He gets that data from it using a study that actually uses the word premature deaths. And those 4,000 premature deaths, really, when you actually get to the bottom of it, is about half a day. you die. And how you can do it, it's modelling. It's a bit like the COVID modelling, all the things that were going wrong with Ferguson and the COVID, you know, all the modelling, 100 million of us are going to die. All right, I'm exaggerating. But the 4,000 is a pathological lie. He's using that. He came out yesterday with a thing that says that clean air, our cleaner air is, the better our sperm count's going to be. That came out yesterday from his thing.
I didn't hear that one.
Yes, he's becoming so desperate. On these issues, he's using all sorts of things to get it through. The good news is the five local boroughs have managed to win a chance of a judicial review, which it takes place in July. The only thing is, he can just ignore that too. He's the way it is. But we can get rid of him by next May, and there's going to be London elections for the mayoral position next year. But the big thing for me is that all the other cities in the country, we've got it in Birmingham, Manchester, Canterbury, Oxford, Bristol, Bath, all these places now are jumping on the bandwagon to fleece motorists even more.
Yeah, and that's what it is, isn't it? Because if you're serious about the air we're breathing, then ban them, by all means. Ban cars that don't reach those levels. However, charging them is just a tax on poor people.
It is. It is a regressive tax, as you quite rightly said. It hits low-income families. And we did a study. I'm sorry to keep bringing up London, because it's happening right across the country, guys. But we asked small traders, plumbers, electricians, will you continue to go into London and do some business if the expansion goes ahead? One in three said absolutely, categorically, no, they would not. And the reason being, they said, when I go and quote for a job, why should I pay £12.50 and the congestion charge, so it's £27.50, just to find out I'm not going to get the job?
Yeah.
And it's that sort of thing. It hits people, you know, shift workers. You get midwives. St Thomas's Hospital told me she's leaving work because she's going to be hit because she works over the 12 o'clock at night. So she's going to get charged for 2 days. No one's thinking about this, and certain some disabled people aren't getting support, and the charities are not getting support. All these sorts of things going ahead. This is purely a cash grabbing scheme, nothing less.
Yeah, I think you should be standing for mayor.
Well, I'm keeping my options open, Will. So you know, maybe your readers and supporters can help fund, because it's all about crowdfunding. It's not. Bear in mind, there's about 9 million people in London. It's not like an MP local, which has about 160,000 people. We're looking at 9 million people, and you know, it's going to be a difficult thing at the moment. So, and you also have to have £10,000, because if you lose the deposit, that's what you have to pay.
Well, now your final objective is to reverse anti-driver policies. What's all that about then?
Well, we've talked about the ultra-low emission zone, but there's low traffic neighbourhoods. There's the big cycle lanes going across. You only have to go around again. I'm sorry bringing up London, but you look at the cycle lanes in central London now. Do you ask any taxi driver how they're held up and they're not allowed to go through certain areas? I drove up to a meeting. I had to go up there because there was a train strike, so I had to use my car to come from Heart of Kent to come into London. And I drove down the embankment towards Portcullis House, which is where the MPs are in Parliament. And I was stuck in this traffic jam behind coaches, buses, you name it. And on next to me was this cycle lane, which is the width of a 40-ton cab HGV truck. And there was about three cycles using this lane in the time I was there for 20 minutes stuck in a jam.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, our exhausts were all pumping out you know, pollutants, all the sorts of things. So the anti-driver, the driver is an easy target. As I said to you, the fifth largest income to any government, it still comes from drivers. So they're an easy target to actually say, oh, we always do that. When the budget, when the Chancellor sits down for every budget, he says, right, what can we get from drivers? Oh, we can do that. Oh, can we put it up? Oh, we can't put it up because it's a bit sensitive. But, you know, we're still getting a shed load of cash from drivers. And it's not just that. There's also things like little things like vehicle excise duty. It's inconsistent. I think, Will, you mentioned your point. You've got a classic car. You can actually drive your car into London and you won't be touched by the ULEZ. Yeah. Whereas if you go to Bristol, you're going to be hit hard.
That's right.
Where's the national consistency of all these things? And what we do need, and this is interesting, we've got active travel and cycling czars all around the country. But do you ever hear a minister for cars or minister for trucks? No. And I think there should be. So we do need to actually reverse this anti-car environment. And I think and I've said it in my newspaper, which I says the political party supporting UK drivers, consumer, small business tax, and tax cuts will win the next general election. that goes as far as to say anyone that supports drivers will probably get a decent loads of votes. At the moment, I can't see any difference between the Tories and Labour at the moment.
So tell me, do you get much grief from the Just Stop Oil protesters?
Yes, I get a lot of grief, not just from them. I get it from all environmentalists. The rebellion people, whatever they were called, and also militant cyclists. I get through my letterbox dog feces wrapped in cycle gloves.
Do you really?
Yeah, and I've also had my house designated as a garage on Google Maps and things like that. You know, which is not fun, getting 130 calls a day saying, "Oh, have you got any DERV or any diesel?"
No, really,
and that sort of thing. And yes, it's very upsetting. And yes, the thing is about all of this is that these people that are fighting these causes are incapable of sitting around a table and debating the issue and saying, yes, we need oil now. Look at the cost of energy and all the things that are going on at the moment. We need oil at the moment. How can we move away from oil actually in a strategic, logical way so that we don't hit people in the hard in their pockets? I know people who can't afford to heat their homes. They can't afford to fill their cars. They can't afford to see their families. All these sorts of things. I've got drivers, you know, who, as I say, who do deliveries. They're on sort of very small wages, etc. And you know, these are self-employed guys who can't afford to fill their cars, and they can't do that. And they end up doing about 100 drops in a day, going right mad to try and make up for the money.
Yeah.
It's everything is wrong about this. We need to get this right. If you get the economy right, we can invest in cleaner technology.
So, since it was formed, how much money do you think Fairfuel UK has actually saved British motorists and hauliers? Can you put a figure on it?
Yeah, I think it is a difficult one to do that. Overall, we think we've stopped £200 billion of planned tax hikes in that time, possibly more. For the average motorist, if you think about it, that does about 10,000 miles a year, is about 40 miles to the gallon type person, we probably save them something like £300 to £400 a year for that sort of motorist. For when you just do the maths in something like a trucker with a, you know, I always get confused how much how many litres go into these big trucks now, but we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds, which means they can use that money they've saved to invest in clean fuel technology or cleaner kit. They can also employ more staff. They can also train. You know, we had the HGV driver shortage. That's all gone quiet now, but there's still a shortage. There's still a problem out there. My daughter is an HGV driver. She loves it, but she gets absolutely bombarded with abuse because she's driving a big truck, even though what she's carrying in her truck is necessary for the people that are complaining to her. The whole message about transport, and I'm going back to my point, I plead for a long-term road users transport strategy and some common sense here. I'm not asking for a free ride. I'm not asking for anything like that. And I'm also asking for a cleaner environment too. But you don't do it by hitting people in the pocket.
So anyone listening now who wants to get involved and support Fairfuel UK, what can they do?
Well, all they've got to do is go to fairfueluk.com, go to the sign up page, and please just sign up. It's all for free, etc. Obviously, there's a donation page there. We'd love that, to have that as well. But I don't force that down people's. The way we've been successful is because we have people power. The more names that sign up, you can help by following some instructions. I send you an email to say how you contact your MP and give you instructions what to send to them. You click on it, put your postcode in, up comes your MP, and you can send any number of campaigning messages that we want to get across to your to our elected elite. And most of them will respond quite favourably. There's the usual ones. I'm not loved by Caroline Lucas in Brighton. The Green, she hates me. She tends to avoid me in the corridors of power when she sees me. But in the main, most people recognise that drivers are the lifeblood, the commercial heartbeat of this country, and it's also the biggest, contribution to our freedom of movement and communication for the last 100 years. Probably second to penicillin. This is the best technological advancement we've ever had.
Brilliant. Howard, thank you very much.
Cheers.
It's been a pleasure.
If you've been enjoying the Talking Trucks podcast, make sure you keep up to date with the latest news, legal advice, interviews, and road tests with Commercial Motor Magazine, delivered direct to your door every week. Subscribe today for just £35 per quarter by visiting commercialmotor.com/podcast.